Call the next case.
Klein versus Commonwealth, E. Kyle McDew, M. Ryan Slaughter, J. Gregory Grubbs, Appellant Counsel, Nicholas S. Demopoulos, Assistant Attorney General, Appellate Counsel.
You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Kyle McDew. I represent Dr. Matthew Klein in this case. The Circuit Court erred in analyzing the sovereign immunity question as if the Commonwealth stood in the same shoes as the defendant did in Klein 1. Klein 1 was about your liability to for injuries to people that weren't on your land. That's the way that it was framed in the first sentence of Klein 1. It's peppered throughout the opinion in Klein 1. And that's how this court characterized Klein 1 in its later opinion, the RGR case. Because RGR was also a case about your liability for injuries to someone who isn't on your land. And this court talked a lot about Klein 1. So that is what Klein 1 is about. So we would respectfully submit that Klein 1 actually has very little to do with this case other than the fact that it involves the same occurrence.
Okay, well, when you say your land, define the ownership of VDOT in the land.
In this case, Your Honor, the tree fell from VDOT's right-of-way
onto
VDOT's road.
Right, right-of-way.
Yes,
right.
Ma'am. Okay. So it is. They are not a fee owner or, you know, they don't own the land in that sense. But they are an occupant of the land. They have a possessory interest.
Yeah, an easement. It's an easement, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. It is recorded to deed and all that stuff. So I accept the...
It's nowhere in the record, though, right?
The deed?
Yes. The easement, is it?
I forget if it was attached to... I will find out on rebuttal if it was attached to the amended complaint. But it is recorded.
An easement is not a possessory interest.
But it is an entitlement to use. So we think that is an entitlement to entry, and they commonly do go in and prune trees and access this right-of-way. That's exactly what Billy Mayo
was doing.
I know,
but we have to define what their interest is in order to figure out what their duty is. So we can't just... we need to figure out what that is.
It is a right-of-way interest. That is absolutely right. So it is not... They are not an owner in terms of, you know, fee simple or anything like that. But they do have an interest recorded to deed in the land. And it is immediately adjacent
right,
to their own roadway.
Right, what the law is on that. An estate differs from an easement in that an estate is an interest in land which is or may become possessory, while an easement is never a possessory interest.
Yes, ma'am. I agree with that. My point here is that this analysis isn't governed by Klein 1.
Okay.
Okay. My point here is that it's that you set the analysis in Klein 1 aside. And so the question is, what is VDOT's duty with regard to maintaining and identifying hazards that would affect travelers on the roadways that it opens opens up to the public? We believe that it is a simple common law duty that just like you know that and here's where I'm getting into the analogy. The analogy would be an owner of land. If you have, and I accept Your Honor's distinction here, that it isn't a perfect analogy, but I think it's a closer analogy than the one that the Circuit Court used in Klein 1, or the one that the Circuit Court used here by relying on Klein 1. If this tree was on your land and it fell on someone on your land, that's basic premises liability law. So here I think it is a standard common law.
But without a possessory interest in the land, how can you apply premises liability law?
I think it's the closest analogy, Your Honor. And I think it's also addressed in the City of Charlottesville case. I think it's addressed in the City of Norfolk versus Travis case. I think all of those cases stand for the proposition that where the entity that operates or that is responsible for the road has notice of a dangerous condition that imperils drivers on that road, it has a duty of reasonable care. I don't think that's
not what Klein said, and that's not what we said in RGR either. We said there's no duty for the owner of a land for things that are naturally grown on his property to maintain that, did we?
That's what you said because the issue in Klein 1 was the private landowner's duty to address dangers to the public roadway.
Right.
My point here, Your
Honor. So you're saying an RGR. You're saying VDOT has a different duty than a private landowner?
I'm saying...
Just because of their ownership or of the easement or the land? Is that what you're saying?
Well, not just because of their ownership or easement of the land. It's more by virtue of their ownership and authority over the road itself.
That's not common law, then. You're outside of common law now, aren't you?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I believe that the city of Norfolk versus Travis, I believe that city of Charlottesville versus Taylor case.
Neither one of those had to do with natural conditions, though, did they? Weren't they man-made improvements?
Maddox was a man-made improvement. City of Norfolk versus Travis was a fence. City of Charlottesville really wasn't. It was just the fact that the road had ended.
That was a nuisance claim, though.
That was a nuisance claim, and count two of our complaint is a nuisance claim, Your Honor. And so I believe that is the nature of this case, is the VDOT, when it builds a road, it can't just then say, and go forth and drive, and we're not going to do anything about dangers on the road. And here, we don't even have to get to that question, Your Honor, about whether in the first instance they have an obligation to do that. They already do it. Here, Billy Mayo...
Well, that's a whole different thing.
I understand.
Assuming a duty is a whole lot different than having a duty to begin with.
I understand. And
I don't think you should conflate those two, do you?
Well, we believe that we prevail on both sort of analytical trains. But the city of Charlottesville versus Taylor case is, I think, really close to this one in terms of there is a known danger adjacent to the land. It's not something that the Commonwealth built. It's just that where they built this road, there was a known danger adjacent to the land. And that one, it was the river and the steep embankment. So there was no man-made instrumentality there. And this court very clearly said that the Commonwealth has a duty, or that the municipality, that the entity that owns the road, has a duty to remedy those apparent conditions, those apparent dangerous conditions. That's what we're saying here, Your Honor, is that it's not just because this tree happened to be in their easement. I think that is a fact in favor of the analysis. But even if it hadn't been in their easement, if they knew or should have known that this tree or a rock or the precipice or something like that gave rise to a dangerous condition, they have a duty because they built
the
road.
Is that a nuisance? Is that a definition of a nuisance where something might fall sometime in the future? Does that make it a nuisance?
I
understand if it's fallen on the road, that might well be a nuisance. I can understand that if the VDOT did nothing about a tree that had fallen on the road. But this is a tree that's along the side of the road, hadn't fallen yet. And you say that's a nuisance. And they had a duty to alleviate that, is what you're saying.
In the city of Charlottesville case, this court said the essential characteristic of a public nuisance as it relates to highways is that the condition imperils the safety of a public highway and is dangerous and hazardous in itself. It doesn't mean...
The facts in that case were that the road ended sort of at a dead-end spot, and the city did nothing to alert motorists that they might drive off the road into the creek. And then they also didn't dredge the creek, so the creek got too high. That's not the situation here at all.
I think it's obviously different facts, but I think it's the same analysis. The court went on to say the dangerous condition need not exist within the street itself. It's not about the street. It's about the area surrounding the street.
But the difference between potential danger and present actual danger in the roadway. Right.
But I think that's what the court is saying in the city of Charlottesville, is that it doesn't have to be in the actual roadway. It doesn't have to be anything about the actual roadway. It's about the area surrounding it. That could be a dangerous drop-off. It could be the Wile E. Coyote scenario of a rock, on an overhang. It could be a tree. It is a dangerous condition. It doesn't happen where they knew or should have known of it, and we have that allegation here. Mr. Mayo specifically noted that's a bad tree, and he just mistakenly thought, but I don't have the right to get to it. That isn't a question of duty. That's a question of, was that reasonable or not? Did he exercise reasonable care in his conduct there?
Would it be your position that he's going to have to obtain the right to get to it? I mean, if there's like a tree that's, been uprooted by a storm and it's leaning like over the road, would it be the VDOT's responsibility? It's like, we've got to condemn that tree or whatever, we got to go and do that because we can't have giant trees hanging over roads about to fall on top of people.
Your Honor, I think this goes outside of the complaint, the amended complaint, because I don't need it in this case. But I think the law is that the VDOT has the ability to go onto land to remedy those kinds of problems, even if it's not, even if the stump isn't in their right of way. I think that is what the law is. We don't have to get into that in this case because the stump is in fact in their right of way.
All right, but I guess the point I was making, aren't you saying it doesn't make any difference whether it wasn't? In their right of way. That's not determinative for you in this case.
Broadly speaking, that is correct, Your Honor. Here, we just don't need to get to that second question because it was, in fact, in their right of way. There's no question about their ability to access this.
Right. And I guess the question is, from what I've heard people talking, a lot of people don't think that's relevant.
I'm happy with it not being relevant. I mean, it's just...
But that's integral to your unity of use theory, though, if we're going down that road.
It's integral if you try to relate this case to Klein 1. That's what differentiates this case from Klein 1. I don't really think it matters because I don't think Klein 1 really has anything to do with this case.
Excuse me for a second. Wouldn't the distinction between this and Klein 1 be the defendant? I mean, the VDOT as opposed to a private entity?
Certainly.
Isn't that the best way to distinguish
this? That is the key distinction. And here, Klein 1 was about, you know, private landowners' obligation to do anything about motorists. Their obligation to do anything about that. Here, VDOT has an obligation to the motorists. That's not a very controversial proposition. And so, in Klein 1, it was argued incessantly that you don't have to worry about the ramifications of not imposing a duty on the landowner because this is already VDOT's job. Now VDOT is saying it's also not our job, so it's no one's job.
Can I ask you this? How wide is the paved roadway?
How wide is the paved roadway?
Estimated.
In that area, it's basically three lanes, I believe. It's a lane this way, and a turn lane.
Maybe 30 feet?
That's not in the amended complaint, Your Honor. I know that in the amended complaint, the tree was about 15 and a half feet off the roadway.
So we have a right-of-way that includes the paved roadway, let's say it's 20, 30 feet, and then the right-of-way is broader than that because it includes 15 feet on both sides of the roadway, right?
Yes, sir.
So the legal issue is if a private person had a private road over a right-of-way and a tree on one aspect of the right-of-way fell on someone on another aspect of the same right-of-way, would they have any duty?
Absolutely. For instance, a homeowners association. There are all sorts of developments, at least where I live, where the Commonwealth has no responsibility for the roads once you turn into the development. It's all private roads. The HOA controls it and has a right-of-way along, you know, into everybody's yard, some amount of space. And I think that is the right analysis. If there was a clearly dead and
but know, that imagine, point is a narrower point than your second argument, which is whether or not they had a right of way, whether or not the tree was in the right of way and fell on someone else also in the right of way. It doesn't matter because they have a duty anyway, which is your second point, which seems to me to be incredibly broad compared to the first point.
Yes, I believe they have a duty. They have a duty because they run the road. They built the road. They open it up to the public. They allow the public to drive on it. They have a duty of just a reasonable care to make sure that it's safe for the public. Whether a specific tree poses that, you know, such a threat that prompts that duty is a fact question.
But if that were true, then if the tree were on foot 16 instead of foot 15. And it's outside the right-of-way, you would still say there's a duty. Why do we need to go so far in this case? Because your tree is in the right-of-way.
I absolutely agree, right? We don't need to go that far because here it is in the right-of-way. I think if those were the facts, I would be arguing for what Your Honor just said. But that is a broader proposition that I don't believe we need to get to. If I may, I'd like to preserve the rebuttal of the remainder of my time.
43 seconds.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good afternoon, I should say. My name is Nick Samopoulos. I'm here on behalf of the Commonwealth of Virginia, the appellee in this case. Respectfully, we would request that you grant, or excuse me, affirm the trial court's decision granting the Commonwealth of Virginia's plea of sovereign immunity for three particular reasons. First, under the Virginia Tort Claims Act, the Commonwealth can only be liable in circumstances in which a private person is liable. In Klein 1, this court, and I said Klein 1 meaning Klein v. Bangor, 2012 decision, this court held that a private person could not be liable to a traveler on an adjacent roadway for a natural condition on his or her land.
That falls on someone that's not on his land. And that was the English common law principle that was used.
I apologize, I didn't hear, Your Honor.
Klein relied upon the English common law proposition, which was if you have a natural condition and it falls or damages someone outside your premises, outside your property, then you don't have a duty. But we have here the VDOT having the right-of-way easement 15 feet on either side of the roadway. The tree is falling within the easement. So if we had Walmart, let me use this example. Walmart builds a private road across someone else's land, gets an easement, and the road is 20 feet wide. And then they have a 10-foot easement on either side of the road. So the entire, the whole easement is the road in the extra area, right? And trees are growing there. If a tree fell down because it had not been tended to in 25 years on someone driving on Walmart's road, even though Walmart is just an easement holder, wouldn't the person be able to sue Walmart, particularly if they chopped all the other bad trees down and didn't chop this tree down?
And I think that's possible, Your Honor. I think that you're dealing with two situations of two private pieces of property, but here you're dealing with public roadway.
Well, wait a minute now. There's the problem, because as I understand the Virginia Tort Claims Act, we treat the Commonwealth the same way we treat a private person under exactly the same circumstances. So why isn't my Walmart example the exact analog for private party purposes? And if we find them liable, why wouldn't we, because of the Virginia Tort Claims Act, find the government liable?
I would say, again, in this case, because we're dealing with a public roadway, and so the principles of applicable to public roadways are what have to apply here, and so private persons can't own public roadways or have easements in those public roadways. So I think that's a distinction.
Well, private people have roadways. Walmart builds roads across private land, and they're not the government. So if we treat the government under the Virginia Tort Claims Act the same way we treat a private person, and a private person would be liable for trees falling within their right-of-way on people, why would not the government be liable for trees falling on their roadways?
I would say because, again, I would go back to the state of nature, and this court has never recognized a natural condition on a piece of land falling onto another private land or a roadway to give rise to a cause of action. Because it's in the state of nature. It's a natural condition. It's not an instrumentality next to the side of the road. And throughout the municipal law, throughout these cases dealing with natural conditions, there just hasn't been a duty to the...
So Walmart's not liable in that hypothetical?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Is it? Right.
Do you have any authority for that?
That's going to be my question.
A private road owner is not liable for premises liability that occurs on the right-of-way that they purchased through easement?
Well, I don't, Your Honor, but I would say a premises liability case is not the appropriate analysis in this case. It's more of what the analysis is for the roadways and natural conditions next to roadways. So a premises liability analysis is a distinct analysis, and this court has always looked at roadway analysis, which is different. So premises liability, I don't think, would be the controlling analysis here. For instance, like this court has recognized that it is the public at large that owns the roadways. So, for instance, to have a premises liability situation with an invitee, you essentially would have to have the public at large be not only the owner and occupant of the land, but the invitee as well. And that's a situation that just doesn't make any sense. And I would say, in this case, the language of the Virginia Tort Claims Act, which is not before this court in Klein 1, is coextensive with the decision in Klein 1, because we're still dealing with a tree in the state of nature adjacent to the roadway, and it's clear from the record the Commonwealth of Virginia does not own this tree, and the Commonwealth of Virginia does not maintain this tree, and it is in the state of nature. This is Dunmore's tree spill, and this is Dunmore's property. So to extend liability.
Is your position that Dunmore is liable despite what we said in Klein 1, or is your position that no one is responsible for an obviously decaying tree that's right on the edge of the highway. Which is your position?
I would say that based upon the precedent in this court, there hasn't been a decision where the Commonwealth or municipality has been held liable for something in the state of nature, the natural decline of trees.
So which is your position, that no one is liable or that we got it wrong in Klein 1 and Donlora?
I don't believe you got it wrong in Klein 1.
So no one's liable?
Essentially, sometimes there's nobody liable in the situation.
So the principle is there's no duty to chop down a tree that's getting ready to fall on somebody, and the tree is on your property or property that you have an easement on.
The Commonwealth has the authority to remedy the roads. The Commonwealth has the authority, not the duty. Just like Dunmore and Klein 1 had the authority to remedy his tree, but not the duty to do it. So there's a distinction, I think, between the statutory authority to do something and the duty.
I get it, but the thing I'm circling around, and I'll leave you alone on this, but I'm just confused. I thought the whole point of the Virginia Tort Claims Act was to treat the government and make the government liable in the same way a private person would be liable under exactly the same facts.
Right.
So I have a road going up my farm, and let's say there are trees on either side of the road, and I see one of them is about ready to fall on somebody. I go, I don't have to worry about that. And if it falls on someone and hurts them, wouldn't I be sued?
I would say, again, Klein 1, the facts of Klein 1 are the same facts.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a defendant, a private defendant with a private road and trees on their, either their fee or their right-of-way easement that falls on them. That's not Klein 1. Klein 1 is falling on someone else's property.
Right, and I would say, again, looking at Klein 1, that we're still dealing with natural conditions, and we're still dealing with matters in the state of nature. So it's different than, again, I would say, that's what I think was the analysis in Klein 1, and the cases before that was whether something is a natural condition and whether something is in the state of nature.
So if a tree falls in a state park over a walkway, and it's everybody knows a tree should be cut down and is dropping branches weekly, the Virginia Tort Claims Act would not provide a remedy for that? Because it's a natural condition, trees just drop from time to time and they die?
I think that if we're looking at the case from Klein 1, the situation in Klein 1 we're dealing with the roadways, that the case is entirely consistent with Klein 1. This case is entirely consistent. It's the same facts and circumstances. If you go into a premises, we're doing a different analysis. We're going outside, we're going to a premises liability analysis and not a roadway analysis. So I think it's different. We're still dealing with whether a private person is responsible for land falling onto public property. So it's not private property falling onto private property. It's private property falling onto public property. And in Klein 1, this court said a private person has no liability for his natural conditions falling onto public property. So the Commonwealth, being the private person, would have no liability for its natural conditions falling onto public property. So that's why the cases are coextensive and I believe control here.
If the Commonwealth has the authority and they exercise that authority by patrolling the highways to make sure there is nothing there that's going to fall over and injure the public, they negligently do it. They see this tree, they assume it's someone else's responsibility. And patrolling the highway under their authority to do so, haven't they assumed the duty?
I would say, based upon this court's precedent, that in order to have an assumption of a duty, you need to have an affirmative act or an exchange or an interaction with
the affirmative park. Act is patrolling the highways to make sure there are no trees that and might fall into.
And so that would go to the inspection aspect, maybe, assuming a duty to inspect. But then you come to the second duty, which is a duty to remediate. And again, if you, those are two different duties. So having a duty to go inspect doesn't necessarily mean there's a duty to remedy. And if there is, as we raised in our brief, those are legislative functions that protect the Commonwealth under the Tort Claims Act because they're entirely discretionary and they're entirely full of individual judges at every step in the way. So that's why the legislative function analysis of the Virginia Tort Claims Act, which is not before this court in Klein 1, which is before this court now, provides the Commonwealth an additional immunity from this case.
Actually, though, counsel, I mean, this court has adopted the restatement second towards Section 323, right? And it says failure to exercise such care has to increase the risk of such harm to have liability under assumption of duty.
Right. And so in this case, an omission wouldn't increase the risk of harm because the tree is still in the same situation it was in whether it was inspected or not. But irrespective, you still go from the inspection duty to the remediation duty. And that brings us back into the legislative function analysis.
Well, let me ask you this question. It's not just increasing the duty, or it could be that the alleged victim relied upon your carrying out that duty that you've assumed, right?
I would say if there was a specific interaction with a second party.
Well, let me give you a hypothetical. If I'm driving down Interstate 64 between Richmond and Williamsburg, trees all over the place, I'm going 70 miles an hour, which is a legally posted speed limit. Aren't I relying upon VDOT to maintain that, to make sure trees aren't going to fall on me as I drive down the road?
I understand what Your Honor is saying. I think you do rely on that, but I think when you're talking about the duties over the roadways, you're talking about the duties of the roadways themselves. That's why this Court has continuously looked at the distinction between the state of nature and the streets themselves, the traveled portion of the street.
So now I've got to be careful that trees might fall on me? I should go less than 70? Maybe I go 5 miles an hour? That's probably the good enough speed so I won't. I'll slow the road down a lot.
I think you were in front of me earlier.
And Your Honor, I think, you know, we're still looking at the distinction between natural conditions in the state of nature.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, but you still can assume a duty to a natural condition,
can't you? The Commonwealth can assume a duty.
And that's what we're talking about, is assumption of duty right now.
The Commonwealth can assume a duty to a person if the requisite elements of assumption of duty are present, and if there are facts to support that.
Well, but it's not in this case, but we've all driven down the highway and seen VDOT pruning trees.
Right.
And so we assume VDOT prunes dead trees. He's driving down the highway at 70 miles an hour under the assumption that VDOT does what we've seen VDOT do. Why isn't that an assumption of the duty?
Because I think, again, you need a specific party under this Court's precedent.
So VDOT would have to send something out to every driving member of the public to say we do or we don't prune trees?
I would say an example would be is if a citizen calls VDOT and says there's this tree that's going to fall, and we say VDOT says we're going to go fix that tree, and they don't do it, then there was an assumption of a duty, because in that case there was a specific interaction in the affirmative act to do something. But again,
I'm going to tell everybody, the Attorney General told me I better not go faster than 5 miles an hour. I'm in big trouble. Okay.
No, and I think that, you know, assumption of the duty in this case, I don't believe is supported by this Court's precedent, given that there has to be some kind of affirmative act. I'm not saying that the Commonwealth cannot assume the duty for certain things, but again, that's within their authority to do that. It's not a duty. And if they do assume the duty, whether they assume the duty, again, we go back into the legislative function analysis, because to assume that duty to do something is all discretionary. They're all discretionary acts. They all involve individual judgments, not just looking at the tree, this one tree, but looking at every single tree.
Well, let me ask you this, and in Burns versus Gagnon, we said this was a factual determination for a jury or a fact finder to make. Is that what we need to do in this case, send this case back to see whether there was a reliance, and then we can talk about what the legislative function might be?
I think that even, Your Honor, I don't think it needs to be sent back. I think even if you assume that there was a duty in this case, that was the assumption of the duty was to inspect the tree. You still have to go through the processes of, okay, now we've inspected the tree, we've determined that, you know, action may need to be taken. We have to determine, we still have to exercise the judgment and discretion under Maddox to determine what kind of remedy needs to be taken. What do we need to do? How do we need to do it? And that's just not this particular tree. The appellant wants to impose a duty upon a Commonwealth for every single tree in the state of nature along the roadways.
Yeah, but we don't need to go that far here. I mean, they had actual notice of this dead tree. So that's a pretty narrow rule, as opposed to there's tens of thousands of miles of roadway and we're going to hold the Commonwealth responsible for maintaining the health of every one of those trees. It's just not possible.
And I understand. And I would still say a broad duty would just serve the purpose of sovereignty, but even finding an assumption of duty here, we're still looking at the state of nature, and I think this Court has continuously recognized that the state of nature is distinct from instrumentality. Like in City of Norfolk Travis, that case involved notice of an instrumentality built on the side of the road, not a natural condition. So the notice in that case went to an instrumentality, which is easier, I think, for something in the state of nature or a billboard, or there's a distinction there between the man-made conditions and the instrumentality.
So why does that distinction make any kind of sense when in the situation of actual notice? Because the danger is the same either way, so tree versus something else. I'm just trying to figure out why there's this conceptual difference between the two.
Between man-made and...
Right.
I just think when we're looking at the state of nature, we've always looked at it that way. And that's not to say it's the right way to look at it, but we've always looked at it that way. That something in the state of nature is easier to control. It's easier to look at and say, you know, there's notice of a defect or there's no notice of a defect. But I still think that you still don't get past the legislative function issue here, which is that whether something gives notice of the defective condition, whether something needs to be remedied, whether something needs to be inspected in the state of nature, not things that are already falling on the road, because I would say if something has already fallen on the road, that's a different case altogether. And VDOT would have to do something about that. But when we're talking about the state of nature, that's a completely different issue. And to drive down the road and to look at these trees, inspect these trees, requires judgment. It requires individual judgment. And those judgments and those discretionary decisions, especially to use VDOT's public resources, those funds, those require, it's a legislative function. And if there was a duty on the Commonwealth to do this, to go down public highways and inspect...
Maddox defined a legislative function as the design of the project, drawing a distinction between the design of the project and the maintenance of the project. So why would the maintenance of the trees be legislative when we've drawn that distinction?
I think with the nuisance in Maddox, the maintenance issues were incorporated into the design and the nuisance issues. So it was my reading of Max was that it was kind of one and the same because we were looking at the nuisance claim. So the negligence claim and the court looked at the maintenance issues and because they were incorporated into that allegation of the nuisance. So in that case, we're dealing with discretion in the decision making process and the use of public resources. And
just out of curiosity, you've answered my question. For the chief's benefit, do the signs on Afton Mountain say "Watch out for falling rock" or "fallen rock"?
I do not know the answer to that question. But
I know for a fact it just says "Watch out."
And respectfully, I would say that Maddox did not limit its decision to design or limit its decision to design or any particular theory of liability. The question is whether there's discretion and judgment involved. And the question is to impose a duty on the Commonwealth to, if the court were to go that far, to impose a duty on the Commonwealth to inspect and remedy trees or to have an undertaking, that's not an undertaking by a statute, but a duty, not an authority. That's really, whether there's something, there's a vacuum in the law, that's really something that the General Assembly needs to look at in light of the Tort Claims Act to determine if we're going to waive immunity, because the General Assembly, the principle of sovereign immunity, there's no waiver of immunity unless it's expressly and unequivocally stated in the Tort Claims Act. And so
your time has expired.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Mr. McNew, how about if we add a minute to your time, given the amount of time that comes?
I'll do you one better, Judge. I was going to say, unless the court has any questions, I'll cede the remainder of my time.
Well, you indicated you would let me know whether the easement was in the record.
I don't believe it is, Your Honor. I don't believe it is attached to them in the complaint as an exhibit. I know it's in my file at my office. I just don't think it made it into the pleadings file in the circuit.
Right. So my question is, why are we being asked to create a duty and make law on a duty without seeing the deed/easement that's been recorded that I would guess outlines what some of these duties are or are not on the part of the Commonwealth?
My response to that question, Your Honor, is twofold. One is that we've alleged that there is an easement. So we've alleged that the court has to take
what does it say about the duty?
I don't think, it doesn't say anything, I don't think. But my second point is it really doesn't matter for the same reasons that Justice Kelsey was talking about, is that whether it's a possessory interest or a right of, you know, just a right over someone else's land, that's not the deciding factor. The deciding factor is it's your project, it's your problem. And we think that applies to the Commonwealth here as well. And unless the court has any further questions, I would
thank you very
ask
much.
The court that the court reverse remand.
Follow the next.